Good evening. Donald Trump's epic meltdown. The president commands his followers to intimidate voters at the polls during a national debate. The truth behind the Proud Boys. Community control of the police takes the stage. And NYPD violates human rights in the Bronx as witnesses say Julian Assange was targeted by the CIA. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI News for Wednesday, September 30th, 2020. The debate was a microcosm of the divisions rending the United States. A raging president who refused to let his opponent finish a sentence, claiming his enemies are a dark force out to overthrow him and his opponent as well. An opponent who told the president, "Will you shut up, man? And you're the worst president America has ever had." Here are some of the night's lowlights.
Mr. Sure. President, can you let him finish, sir?
He doesn't know how to do that. He has,
you'd be surprised.
And by the way, maybe you could inject some bleach in your arm, and that would take care of it. This is the same man.
That was said sarcastically, that was you know that.
Well, let me ask my question.
Well, I'll ask Joe.
The individual mandate
was the most unpopular aspect of Obamacare. I got rid of it.
I'd like
and we will protect
Mr.
people.
President, I'm the moderator
conditions.
Of this debate, and I would like you to let me ask my question.
He's not worried about you. He's not worried about the people out there breathing in one another.
We've had no negative effect.
No negative effect.
We've had no negative effect. And we've had 35, 40,000
right.
people in these rallies.
A lot of people died. And a lot more are going to die unless he gets a lot smarter, a lot quicker.
So, Mr. President?
Did you use the word smart? Don't ever use the word smart with me. Don't ever use that word.
You're the worst president America has ever had.
Mr. Vice President? Answered his final question.
The final question is, I can't remember which of all his ranties.
I'm having a little trouble myself.
I'm urging my supporters to go into the polls and watch very carefully.
And today, Joe Biden said voters will not stand for it if President Donald Trump loses the election and refuses to leave office. We'll return to this story after important local news. In New York City, hundreds of NYPD officers and members from other city agencies are being sent to neighborhoods in Brooklyn and Queens, where an uptick in coronavirus cases has raised fears of new outbreaks of the coronavirus. Areas of continued concerns where positivity rates are climbing above 3% include Gravesend, Homecrest, Midwood, Kew Gardens, Edgemere, Far Rockaway, Borough Park, Bensonhurst, Mapleton, Garrison Beach, Homecrest, Sheepshead Bay, Flatlands, Midwood, and Kew Gardens Hills. Mayor Bill de Blasio added several other neighborhoods where health officials are watching rising positivity rates.
In six of the eight neighborhoods, we do see the numbers continue to go up. We have seen some fluctuation by neighborhood. We know, and we've seen it previously in other areas like Sunset Park and Soundview, the numbers can change rapidly in the right direction. So we're going to keep working daily, hourly to make that change. But right now, in six of the eight neighborhoods, we see, unfortunately, an increase. And now the neighborhood of Kew Gardens has surpassed that 3% level we're watching carefully. We're continuing to monitor four additional zip codes that are lower, but we want to be very careful because we've seen some increases. We want to arrest the problem in those areas as well. We'll be continuing to send resources to them as well. That includes Rego Park, Kensington, Windsor Terrace, Brighton Beach, Manhattan Beach, Sheepshead Bay, and Williamsburg. 400-plus police officers will be out in these communities providing information, providing free masks, reminding people that they are required to wear masks. And obviously, in the case where there is noncompliance, issuing summonses, 400 from the NYPD, 250 compliance officers from other city agencies, and approximately 300 members of the test and trace corps. So almost 1,000 city employees will be out in these target zip codes.
And as Mayor de Blasio, the number of reported cases on a seven-day average citywide was 354. The citywide positivity rate is 1.46%. And back to last night's debate. The debate was moderated by Fox News host Chris Wallace, who struggled unsuccessfully throughout the debate to corral Trump. Trump again refused to commit to accepting the election result. He reasserted unfounded complaints that an increase in mail-in ballots due to the coronavirus pandemic would lead to widespread voting fraud. Meanwhile, Trump refused to repudiate his support from white supremacist groups, raising concerns that he was encouraging the group known as the Proud Boys to act as freelance poll monitors.
You have repeatedly criticized the vice president for not specifically calling out Antifa and other left-wing extremist groups. But are you willing tonight to condemn white supremacists and militia groups, sure, and to say that they need to stand down and not add to the violence in a number of these cities, as we saw in Kenosha and as we've seen in Portland.
Sure,
are you prepared
to
specifically
do, that,
do it?
Well,
go
ahead, say,
sir.
I would say almost everything I see is from the left wing, not from the right wing.
So what are you saying?
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it.
Do you want to call them? What do you want to call them? Give me a name.
White supremacists and right
wing. Who would you like me to condemn?
White supremacists and right wing.
Proud Boys. Stand back and stand by, but I'll tell you what, somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because this is not a right-wing problem. This is a left-wing.
FBI director
this
said,
is a left-wing problem.
White supremacist. Antifa's an idea, not an organization.
Oh, you got it.
Not
malicious.
That's what FBI director
gentlemen,
said.
Well, then you know what?
We're done, sir.
Everybody,
we're moving on to the next. We're
moving to bad hits your administration. That's not an idea.
Everybody
Antifa
in your administration tells you the truth has a bad idea.
Can I tell you what?
You have no ideas.
Antifa is a dangerous radical.
All right,
radical
gentlemen,
group.
We're now moving on to the Trump and Biden
be
records.
With them. They'll overthrow you.
When a president, I'm going to ask a question.
President Trump, Chris Wallace, and Joe Biden. Elisa Farah, the White House communications director, told Fox News, "The president has condemned white supremacy countless times. I don't think there's anything to clarify. He told them to stand back. He's leading. He doesn't need any sort of vigilantism." The author of Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook, is Rutgers professor Mark Bray. He says the biggest fear being stoked by Trump is right-wing gunplay and intimidation at anti-fascist protests.
Trump has a documented history of being sympathetic to far-right and white supremacist groups. You only have to reflect basically on what Joe Biden said, right? That he, in Charlottesville, he said that there are good people on both sides. In a moment when he could very clearly have distanced himself from white supremacists and fascists, he went the opposite direction. He gave a very clear message to the Proud Boys to be ready. And when you couple that with the fact that Trump has made it clear that he does not intend to step down in the case of an electoral defeat, it seems like a kind of classic fascist blueprint of telling his troops to be ready.
What are the Proud Boys? Who are they?
The Proud Boys are a kind of misogynist, Western chauvinist, fascist organization. They wear uniform black and yellow Fred Perry shirts, and they're known for being violent and anti-Semitic. And so, you know, they're a documented hate group, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. And so there really is no excuse for Trump to give them a shout out like that. The kind of loyalty that the Proud Boys have shown to Trump and their support of his message, it's clear that Trump is more interested in giving fodder to his hardcore base than he is trying to reach out and expand the realm of support he has in society.
Is Antifa out to overthrow the government?
Biden, surprisingly, was correct that Antifa is a kind of idea or an activity or politics of radical opposition to the far right. Not one single group, although, of course, there are well-organized Antifa groups out there.
Do you think that Donald Trump is rightfully worried that he might be overthrown?
Donald Trump has a very deep-seated disdain for the electoral process and is trying to prepare his sympathizers for the notion that he's going to hold on to power no matter what the votes say.
Are the Proud Boys really a threat, or are they just a bunch of weekend warriors who will run at the first sign of police actually putting them in jail?
They're very concerned about being imprisoned, and some have in New York and elsewhere for their well-documented violence. And the issue really here for me is less the Proud Boys than the broader Trump support base and all of the militias and the potential for guns entering into the mix and Trump supporters shooting those who may be protesting his effort to stay in power. That really for me is the big scare.
Is this like a proto-Civil War situation or just an ugly time in American history?
I'm still a little reluctant to use the term civil war. It seems that almost no matter what happens, we're going to have a period of significant societal unrest later this year.
Why now?
In a big picture sense, this seems to be a kind of aftermath of the Obama era, where a lot of white conservatives came to feel like their vision of America, strongly founded on white supremacy, was under attack, and the backlash against that. Really, this would be much less of a thing if Trump weren't forecasting the notion that he's going to stay in power no matter what. And if he weren't calling upon his supporters to, as he calls it, monitor the polls, which sounds a lot like voter intimidation, but that's where we are.
Rutgers professor Mark Bray is author of Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Joe Biden on Tuesday called President Donald Trump a racist during a heated exchange over issues of race and protests against law enforcement that led to an angry exchange over Biden's alleged support of community policing.
First of all, what does reimagining policing mean, and do you support?
It means.
If I might finish the question. What does reimagining policing mean, and do you support the Black Lives Matter call for community control of policing?
Look, what I support is the police having the opportunity to deal with the problems they face. And I'm totally opposed to defunding the police officers. As a matter of fact, police, local police, the only one defunding in his budget calls for a $400 million cut in local law enforcement assistance. They need more assistance. They need, when they show up for a 9/11 call, to have someone with them as a psychologist or psychiatrist to keep them from having to use force and be able to talk people down. We have to have community policing like we had before, where the officers get to know the people in the communities. That's when crime went down. It didn't go up. It went down. And so we have to be engaged.
That's not what they're talking about, Chris. That's not what he's talking about, defunding the police.
That is not true.
He doesn't have any law support. He has no law enforcement.
That's not true.
Almost nothing.
Look.
Oh, really? Who do you have? Name one group that supports you. Name one group that came out and supported you. Go ahead. Think. We have time.
We don't have time to do anything.
All right. Name one law enforcement group that came out and supported you.
Gentlemen, I think I'm going to take back the moderator's role.
Last night's debate, an analyst at the Institute for Policy Studies is Netfa Freeman, who is co-authoring a forthcoming book, Community Control Over Police. He says there's a difference between community policing and community control of the police.
It was Chris Wallace that asked point blank Biden about community control of the police. He attributed it to the Black Lives Matter. He said, what do you think about the Black Lives Matter call for community control of the police? And Biden unequivocally said he was not for that, that he was actually for the police being able to decide things for themselves, and also saying we needed to go back to community policing, which we know is distinctly different from community control of police. And he talked about where the police get to know you in the communities and do these kind of things, which we know that's how community policing is. We reject it. It means that the people in the community are being complicit in how the system polices us in mass incarceration and informing on each other and everything, instead of the democratic community control of the police, where the community would be able to have a say on how people who are charged with carrying guns and being in their community, how that happens. Also the police budget, where all that goes. So this is a democratic and human right for people, and Biden rejected it. He didn't go into it at all, and he promoted what we already know is a public relations ploy by the state.
At one point, Trump himself referred to Biden as having called people of color super predators, which Biden denied. And I think it was Hillary Clinton who said that.
It was Hillary Clinton that said it. And Trump actually mentioned both of them together and accused both of them. Trump is an overt racist. I mean, we know, and he wouldn't even denounce the Proud Boys or anything like that. All of the system, no matter whether you're Democrat or Republican, whether you're even if you're Biden, knows that the white supremacy is not just about the attitudes and a belief in people's heads. It's a system. White supremacy is a system. And so for Biden to actually denounce community or reject community control of the police, and then for the media moderator not even to ask him a hardball question, given the young man in Kenosha who shot somebody, those kind of things, they could ask them about the inherent racism that's involved in policing. But they don't ask them about those things because the system needs police. And all of them know that. And that's a bipartisan consensus. And so what we need to be doing is, how do we get self-determination and control for the people most impacted by the racist and classist and patriarchal indiscretions or behavior of police? And that would be to give people power over police.
Do you plan to vote for either of these two men?
I can't possibly, no. They stand for essentially the same thing. Only one is more blatant about what he believes, and he's childish. And the other one, he still believes in mass incarceration, unbridled war and aggression against the world, which also has racist overtones to it, undertones to it.
Anything like that?
We need to be fighting for self-determination. One of the things in terms of community control in general is community control of the police.
Netfer Freeman is co-writing a forthcoming book, Community Control Over Police. And Revolutionary Communist Party activist Carl Dix added that Trump is calling on organized groups, not just individuals, to break up the election.
There are organized groups. The Proud Boys are among them. They're not the only one. And he didn't just call them out. He shouted them out and gave them marching orders. Stand by. That's be on alert. And then he talked about people going into the polling places. Donald Trump is not running to win a presidential election. He is running for Führer. That is what this comes down to. He is letting you know that. He's got a whole plan, plan A, plan B. He's putting a Christian fascist judge on the Supreme Court who has already said she will not recuse herself if the elections come up, in order to, if he can stall it and run it into the courts, that's how he's going to get it. The guy is stealing the election, subverting the election. Right now, he's telling you what his moves are to do it. And it really underscores that while everybody with a beating heart should vote against Trump, voting by itself is not going to be enough. People need to take to the streets. For people who are wondering about this fascism thing, is this what it is and what should we do about it? There's going to be a dialogue between Andy Z, a co-initiator of Refuse Fascism, and Jason Stanley, the author of the book, How Fascism Works. It's an online dialogue sponsored by Revolution Books. Go to the Revolution Books website or social media at RevBooksNYC. This is the question that people need to get into. What is this? How does it work? And what do we do about it?
And that's Revolutionary Communist Party activist Carl Dix. The website he's referring to is revolutionbooksnyc.org. On June 4th, the NYPD trapped over 300 protesters in the Bronx marching for George Floyd and waited until the 8 p.m. citywide curfew to arrest them for breaking the law. That's according to a human rights group writing in a scathing report released today. Human Rights Watch said Bronx cops surrounded protesters on June 4th in a tactic known as kettling, refused to let them disperse, then began wailing their batons, beating people from car tops, shoving them down to the ground, and firing pepper spray in their face as soon as the curfews hit.
You guys are on the other side. Where do we go?
Where do we go? Where are we going to go? We're corralled.
Jail. We are currently trapped at 136 and Brook Avenue since 7:45. They are pushing us. They are pushing us.
They are pushing us.
They are pushing us. They are pushing us.
What are they doing? Why are they doing this? The police officers are like grabbing people. Oh my goodness.
You guys are pushing us from the other side. What the fuck? Bro, why don't you just help us?
The 8 p.m. shutdown was imposed a few days earlier to stem widespread looting and marches against the death of George Floyd, who died in Minneapolis police custody. The widespread looting is their words, the report that I'm reading, and in fact was shown to be not as widespread as was made out. Ida Sawyer represents Human Rights Watch, the author of the report.
What we found was that it was a deliberate and planned operation by the NYPD, led by the highest ranking uniformed officer, the chief of department, Terrence Monahan, to trap and surround a group of around 300 protesters who had been marching peacefully through the neighborhood. And they were trapped just before the 8 o'clock curfew. And then right after the curfew, the police moved in on them, wailing their batons, beating down on them from the tops of cars, firing pepper spray directly into people's faces, shoving them to the ground, and then they rounded up over 250 people for arrest. We also documented how they targeted street medics who were deployed to support protesters, and they either arrested or obstructed them, preventing them from providing care for the injured protesters. And they also targeted legal observers, arresting at least 13 of them. And this is despite clear assurances that medics and legal observers had gotten from the mayor's office saying that they were exempt from the curfew.
How did you find out that it was planned?
NYPD Commissioner Dermot Shea said at a news conference, we had a plan which was executed nearly flawlessly in the Bronx. They were really following the protesters and getting ready to conduct this massive operation to trap, assault, and arrest them. The crackdown was entirely unprovoked and without warning. Many of the people we interviewed felt like they were being targeted deliberately because the police wanted to send a strong warning to the protest organizers. And this protest was led by community activists from the South Bronx who are known and outspoken critics of police violence and racism.
What was the outcome?
The 263 people who were arrested, they were given either summonses or desk appearance tickets for Class B misdemeanors for curfew violations or unlawful assembly. In September, the Bronx District Attorney filed to dismiss the summonses. The desk appearance tickets would also be dismissed. Some of the protesters say that they still face charges. 61 protesters who were injured during this protest, and that includes lacerations, a broken nose, a lost tooth, a sprained shoulder, broken finger, black eyes, and potential nerve damage. You know, beyond the harm done to protesters themselves, we wanted to get an understanding of what the financial cost of this operation would be. Likely the most expensive part of this operation will come from the misconduct complaints, investigations, and lawsuits. We estimate that the operation could in the end cost New York taxpayers at least several million dollars. It's highly unlikely any of the police officers or their supervisors themselves will face disciplinary or other consequences.
Ida Sawyer represents Human Rights Watch. And at the Julian Assange extradition hearing at the Old Bailey, London, the court heard today about a plot to kidnap or kill Assange, paid for by a senior Trump associate. Rebecca Miles has been following the hearing and files this report.
The details about the plot came during testimony from two anonymous witnesses read to the court by the defense barrister Mark Summers on Wednesday. Witnesses were former employees of a Spanish security firm, UC Global, hired by the Ecuadorian embassy to provide security. During the contract, the company filmed and recorded Julian Assange and his visitors on the orders of Donald Trump associate Sheldon Adelson, a Las Vegas casino tycoon. Contractors hired by Adelson also discussed kidnapping or poisoning Assange and allegedly broke into the office of his lawyer, followed him, as well as passing on information to U.S. intelligence agencies. Witness one stated that they worked for David Morales, who in July 2016 traveled to a trade fair in Las Vegas and returned with a flashy contract from Trump associate Sheldon Adelson. The contract didn't make sense, said witness one, as it was for security services at Adelson's casinos, which already had their own security. Asked how he got the contract, Morales allegedly told the witness, "We had to go over to the dark side," saying they were cooperating with the U.S. intelligence authorities to gather information on Assange. Witness 1 said after Trump won the 2016 election, the cooperation became absolutely clear and daily reports were sent to the dark side. Morales traveled to the U.S. once a month to talk to our American friends, and his wealth increased, receiving $200,000 per month for his services. Witness 1 said the CCTV cameras in the embassy were changed to record sound in 2016 with tapes given to the U.S. authorities. The witness added that Morales was obsessed with Assange's meetings with his lawyers because that was the information the American friends wanted. Written evidence from witness two, an IT worker, said Morales asked for cameras that recorded sound in a way that could not be detected to be installed in the embassy. And later Morales wanted U.S. intelligence to have real-time access to the embassy. The company installed a microphone in the toilet, obtained Assange's fingerprints, and the witness was asked to steal a baby's diaper so U.S. intelligence could check if the child seen in the video was Assange's. The witness also said they heard discussions of extreme measures, such as leaving the embassy door open so Assange could be kidnapped and discussing poisoning him. The court was told the Spanish authorities have arrested David Morales and a trial is underway. The two witnesses are under armed protection after police found guns at the home of Morales with the numbers filed off. The hearing continues tomorrow. Rebecca Miles, WBAI Pacifica Radio, New York.
Rebecca Miles has been following the daily proceedings in the Julian Assange extradition hearing at the Old Bailey, London. He could face 175 years in jail and being housed in a supermax prison in Colorado under special administrative measures. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, September 30th, 2020. The news is produced with Rebecca Miles and Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening.